Hello, hello, world. We're back, and it's been a happy new year for 5 days so far. Nothing too bad has happened. And this is our first installment. We're doing a pre-tape, of course. If you just tuned in, you are listening to UHIH 1 radio broadcast team, otherwise known as You Heard It Here First radio broadcast team. That's UHIARDITHEAR. 1st.com, also on UPRN Music Talk Radio, United Public Radio Network, down in Louisiana, Mannery, Louisiana specifically, as well as Christian Pass. That's one of our mother stations. Of course, we want to give a big high five and shout outs to iHeartMedia and Spreaker.com. So if you're driving around in the car, you can get us on iHeartMedia, or just go to Spreaker.com, download the app, and we're always there. You can go also get our archives, I think. Will, is that SoundCloud and iTunes now?
SoundCloud, iTunes, YouTube, Podbean. We're on a number of websites and iTunes.
Well, I'm Benito Childs, and we're just getting started. This is our first broadcast of the year 2019, and we're trying to kick it off with things that are more better in terms of just of our format. What we tried to do when we first opened our show several years ago, Will and I, was always have at least two guests on the show. One who's an established veteran, hopefully that has, you know, a whole wall full of gold and platinum records and Grammys and stuff, and it's been around the globe. And the other who's just starting his journey out, looking to have the whole adventure, the whole ride as professional entertainer. That's what we do here on You Heard It Here First, and we play the music of the new guy and the established veteran. Having said that, Will, talk to me about who our guests are for today.
Well, I got to let the world know this. This is one of the guys, who single-handedly changed the face of hip-hop in history. If it wasn't for his group, better known as the Too Loud Crew, you would have never had the freedom of speech to say what you want to say and be as nasty as you want to be. We got the legendary Brother Marquise from the Too Loud Crew. Plus, we have a new up-and-coming artist out of Phoenix, Arizona, named Money Man Ramsey. Say hello to the world, guys.
Money Man Ramsey.
Hey, well, what's going on, everybody? How you doing? All right. How are you doing, Mr. Ramsey?
I'm doing great.
Good luck to you on your career, young man. Brother Marquise.
Brother Marquise, so, big fan. Like Bill Taylor said, you have done a lot. I mean, I'm not the type to just listen to one type of era. I have done my research into old school, and you definitely, your whole crew is definitely one of the biggest influences that hip-hop has had, for sure. There's no doubt about that.
They got the girls on the floor dancing.
You got them girls shaking them booties.
Oh, yeah. We started twerking. We started twerking 25 years ago.
Over 25 years ago. That's a long time, you know, and it seems like it really wasn't that long ago. It really feels like it was maybe a couple of years ago that the Too Loud Crew was considered the thing in the music industry that was shaking up everybody on a whole bunch of levels. You guys set precedent, changed the law, really, challenged the law, challenged the freedom of speech, and really set it up and paved the way so that the performing and recording artists coming behind us could say, well, what the blankety blank, sleeping, snapping, sleeping, flopping, whatever they want to say.
Hell yeah, that's right.
And that's a big thing. It has to have set such a precedent, and you know, you guys shift things up on a whole bunch of levels because, in a lot of ways, I would hate to, I don't want to say you're the Donald Trump of the music industry, but you know, in terms of new people showing up, going, well, you know, I see y'all got this program and everything, and you know, you're serving, well, you know, what's your serving? But we're going to say it like, you know, we really don't care what your opinion is. Actually, we think there's more people who really want to hear us say it the way we want to say it, and so we're going to do it. That being the case, you know, can we just kind of start there? When that part of what was going on in you all's journey and your adventure was taking place, what was that like for you to know that, oh, man, we're being banned, we're in court, we're doing stuff that's unheard of? What did that feel like to, when I say what was that like for you, I mean like your self-thoughts. What was that like in the relationship that you were having with yourself at the time?
As far as that publicity goes, and it was kind of negative. I think it was great because you know what I'm saying. It just made us a household name at that time. But you know, I always knew that we were going to win the case, and that since it was in the Constitution that you know that we had the right to say what we. Well, we wanted to, and couldn't nobody stop us. I mean, it was kind of cool, you know. You know, after we won, you know what I'm saying? We could throw our middle fingers up to the establishment and those that tried to stop us. That was cool. But you know, when they had banned the records, and everything here in Florida, I thought it was kind of great because, you know, it just made us sell more records. It brought more notoriety to the group. You know, everybody was paying attention and it was great. That was a great time. You know, and I figured as much as if they couldn't put me in jail for doing that, like right then when I'm doing it, then fuck them. I'm gonna keep doing it.
That was really a unique and distinct perception for a young man your age at that time. During the, well, now that would be the 80s, am I correct? The early 80s.
Yeah, early 80s. Man, you can't put me in jail for doing this, man. Forget y'all. You know? I mean, look, it was Elvis Presley. What? Elvis Presley was on stage shaking his hips. He was kind of rated. He was kind of sexual, but they got over it. You know what I mean? Come on,
true.
Come on, man. Come on, man. Then you had people like Andrew Dice Clay. It was people like the comedians been doing it. But since you know, since it was in the hood, and our own people were enjoying the music. We came out with Me So Horny. It started crossing over, and the white kids were taking it home to their parents, and all of a sudden they had a problem with it. Yeah, so one, you know, it wasn't cool for black guys to come from the hood to be telling these white kids, you know, we want some pussy and throw the D and move something and all of that. So it became a problem.
I'm going to say this.
It became a problem.
Y'all made Roy, what's his name, Roy Orbison relevant again when y'all sampled Pretty Woman. Y'all made him pop because nobody was checking for him no more. And when y'all did a version of it, everybody like, yo, who's Roy Orbison?
Well, he didn't have to be popular because, I mean, that publishing company that he had kind of kicked us in the ass because, you know, that cost a lot of money. That cost a lot of money, man, to win that case. And then we were taking everybody's shit, too. So, you know, we had Roy Orbison, that was Pretty Woman, A Cup Rose, and we had George Lucas, and we had Steven Spielberg, which was Full Metal Jacket, and then, man, it was a lot. We had a lot of sample issues.
Because if you look at the song, Me So Horny, that's the baseline for the song Firecracker by Mass Production. For all you old scared, old head funk fans.
Yep. Yes, yes, yes. Right. So they play that song every around every 4th of July. Yep. And then Me So Horny came from Full Metal Jacket, which was George Lucas. Yeah, the movie Full Metal Jacket. And then, of course, Luke was getting problems from the Star Wars people for using Luke Skywalker. So, I mean, it's a gift and a curse, you know what I mean?
I'm going to keep it real. Well, it made me want to look at Full Metal Jacket from that one little part with Me So Horny. We love you long time. I'm like, I got to see this movie.
Yeah,
that one little part they used.
I know it, right? And that's me being young and silly. You know, I used to say that. We was on tour, and every time we check into the hotel, turn on the TV, that movie was on HBO for some reason.
Yeah. Wow. History.
Yeah, man. And I just started saying that. We love you long time. You know, I go down in the lobby and grab a girl and bring her back to the room and want to love her long time.
That was my young days.
That's my young days. You know, that's when I was a young man. I'm loving them long time. And shit, right now, shit, I love them and turn over. They better be glad they get 5 minutes of love.
Oh, my God. All right, now, y'all heard it here first. That's Brother Martez. And if you just tuned in, you are listening to UPRM Music Talk Radio on FM 107.7, also FM 107.5, as well as Spreaker.com, iHeartMedia, and many other platforms. And this is Dry Time Radio. That being said, we're having a lively conversation with the Brother Martez out of the Two Live Crew, and we've also got Ramsey's with us, a new guy out of Phoenix, Arizona, who I understand got some smoke coming up off his stuff, so eventually we're going to play some of his music. I want to hear what he's on. Back to you, Brother Marquise. I understand that you actually hail from upstate New York as a very young man, and then the fam moved you out to was it Southern California or Northern California back in the day?
Southern California. Yep, we moved Riverside.
Okay.
I moved Riverside from Westchester, New York.
From Westchester, New York, I moved to Riverside. That's where I met Rodney O.
Okay, so Rodney O is from Riverside. Okay. Now, who were y'all's influences when you and Rodney O first started kicking it? What were y'all listening to?
Oh, man, we was listening to Bambaataa. We was listening to Bambaataa and Run DMC, and we were going to, out to the Orange Bowl, L.A. Coliseum. It was Egyptian Lover, Uncle Jam's Army.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, me and Rodney was, you know, we were like 12-inch heads. You know what I'm saying? We would go to the stores and try to buy all of the, find everything that was coming in, all of the imports that was coming in from Europe and New York. We was getting them. We was getting them cassettes. We was getting cassettes. We was getting vinyl. Yep.
So this eventually leads to you guys start rapping over the vinyl that you've been getting. What does that feel like for you when you first start? I mean, when do you know that, I think we got something here. I think we got to go ahead and say this to the whole world. What is the steps that lead up to that for y'all as young people in the business?
Man, me and Rodney was just into the culture. Break dancers, call ourselves break dancers, anything, beatboxing, whatever. Whatever, you know, all of that was exciting. So we had an opportunity to make a record. We had an opportunity to make a record, man, and we just took it and ran with it. We made that record. We were in the ninth grade. We made our first record. We were in the ninth grade, yep.
Wow.
Yes, we did. Yep.
Now that's music business history. That's a real history lesson for everybody listening. Especially you young people in the music business that want to know, well, how do you make it big? Well, I think first you make it big inside of yourself first, and then they see that and they come and find you. Actually, you're not hard to find. Well, that kind of hit it on the head, Brother Marcy.
Yeah, and then a little luck, and then a little luck, and a little opportunity and preparation, you know what I'm saying, too, as well.
Well, let's talk about luck. What's your story about the event that takes place? Well, we'll say that the magic, we know the magic is taking place for real. Tab A has been inserted in the slot B, and it is on. What is that like? For those of us who did not get to, you know, be catapulted or found, if you will, we usually end up getting jobs working for people like y'all if we're in the business. There's very few people who have the experience that you guys had as young performers and writers.
Yeah. Well, it was luck, and then besides, too, you know, it was luck, opportunity, and preparation, and besides, it was the content of our music at that time. It was shock value, and that's stuff that we were talking about, wasn't nobody talking about it, man. You know. We're responsible for the explicit lyric sticker, so there you have it, you know. Back in them days, you know, everybody was, you know, a lot of people were basically on conscious rap, you know, and you know, really rocking the party. Then we came out talking about sex and rocking the party with party music, you know what I'm saying? It just changed the game, and you know, the world just took notice. So I could say that we were prepared with the material that we had, and we took advantage of the opportunity, and it fell in line. But then again too, If the establishment wouldn't start messing with us, probably we just would have been some brothers in the hood making explicit records. But as soon as the local authorities got wind of what we were doing and started removing our product off of the shelves, and then we started getting news coverage and all of that for that, bam, just took off and spread it like wildfire.
Suddenly everybody has to have it because it's been banned.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Hey, man, I'm going to say this. They did everything. Richard Pryor, Red Fox, Timmy Markham, and all them guys like Dolemite were doing, they just did it in a rap format. They did everything.
I see that, you know, and I'm glad you're pointing it out in that context.
Well, Pete Meat Markham was rapping. Yeah. Leroy Skillington was rapping. Dolemite was rapping. But yeah. I guess because we were real MCs and we were a rap group, taking bits and pieces from them and being a rap group that did that, you know. Hey, man, Me So Horny changed my life, man. And Me So Horny changed our life when that record came out, man. When the white kids got a hold of that and started taking it home to their parents and started sneaking it around, listening to it, here we go.
You guys own the publishing for that record?
Pardon me?
Do you guys own the publishing for that record?
It was
a big record.
Yeah, it was a big record. Yes.
Big record, actually. I would imagine.
Right.
The amount of money it's generated throughout the years.
Yep. But now again, it's a gift and a curse. With two live crew, that stuff is all the way messed up. We're still trying to figure it out. We're still trying to get things together right now. It's all kind of injunctions Luke sold a catalog to Mr. Weinberger, which is Little Joe, and it's all kind of shit, man.
Let me say that. They call him the White Suge Knight. If you ever hear about Little Joe Records, they call him in the media the White Suge Knight.
They did. Yeah, he gets off on that too. He ain't shit. Good Joe ain't wow. shit.
The white short night, huh? There's such a thing. Now, just as a sidebar, who copied off of who did? Because they ain't both showing up at the same time.
Say what now?
I said, if Lil Joe is the white shrimp night, then who copied off of who? Because they ain't both show up at the same time.
I don't know where both of those individuals are a piece of work. Trust me. I don't really know how the whole rundown of all of that shit happened, man. It comes back to us not really knowing the business, not really mm-hmm. knowing the business, and those 5 years that we were doing well, it seems like it just happened so fast. And man, we got screwed, we got had, and we got taken.
Yeah, and that's why this reason I asked you, because a lot of the new
yeah, Too Loud Crew,
right
Too Loud Crew don't even we don't even own the name. Luke don't own the name. Neither me, Mr. Mix, or Fresh Kid Ice owns the name. Little Joe owns the name, and he's not giving it back, and he ain't giving it back to us. So
Joe, a record label owner, or is he just a person?
Joe's a tax attorney that just begins.
Okay.
Was at the right place at the right time. He used to work for Luke. He used to work for Luke.
That's crazy. He used to work for Luke. Wow.
Yep. And some say he planted himself in there.
He might be listening, too.
Joe might be listening, because he tries to follow everybody around and listen to what's going on and shit. Record it.
Recording.
Well,
hope
I'm going to say this.
That we go in, hope that we go into court.
And get
shout
us in court
to
and try to sue us.
Shout out to Joe. Have a nice life. Shout out to Joe.
Yep. So people would say that Joe had placed himself in there in Luke's business to take it from him. Yep. To take it from him. Yep.
Well, we know as businessmen, most of us who have lived long enough to see these moves now, and let me put it this way, for our listeners out there that are music business aficionados, you really want to know what's going on in the back room and the attitude of the people that make things happen, and the conversations and who the characters are, you know, why they do it the way they do it. One of the things that we find out, simple principle, if you're not going to run a business and somebody else got the hit, but they won't listen to you about how to run the business the way you need it ran and you bring the money, well, you're always at risk of taking it over for them because, well, they know less than you do, but you need it to look like they're doing it.
But the thing about
I missed anything.
No, but the thing about it, Ben, and everybody, it was Luke getting sued left and right from publishers, from using recorded voice messages and stuff. He got sued so left and right, so he had
to. But that's because Lil Joe, as Brother Marquis pointed out, is a tax attorney. He is not schooled in the area of what is called intellectual property. Publishing, royalties, mechanicals, and so on and so forth. Just out of curiosity, Brother Marquis, with all the shows that y'all did and everything as performing artists, did you ever come across a situation where they told you that the place where you guys were working was a union place and you weren't in a union? Or did you decide to make your union members?
No. No, we didn't pay a scale. No, we didn't get paid scale. But, you know, Fresh Street was skimming from that also, too. You know, I could look at it like as a little bit of karma.
Mm-hmm.
I can look at it like as a little bit of karma because, you know, Luke took from us and then somebody will take from you. And you know how that goes around.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yep, but Little Joe has everything. He has everything, and he loves it. and he loves it.
Does Joe guy gets all the royalties that all the work that you guys have done?
Yep. Joe gets everything. Yep. Joe has it all.
Wow, yep. That's crazy.
Yep. He has it all.
Yeah. 100.
How old were you when you guys first signed?
Yep. The question how old were you when you got involved with Lil Joe?
Well, we got involved with Lil Joe after the breakup with Luke. I think we got involved with him, what, like 95? You know, he got everything out of bankruptcy. He drove Luke into bankruptcy, and he got it that way.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I'm not with Little Joe anymore. Chinaman, Mr. Mix is over there. Mr. Mix is with Little Joe right now. So I'm not performing as Two Live Crew.
Okay.
Okay. Yep. Yeah, so Two Live Crew is, we had a lot of success. We went all the way to the Supreme Court and did all of that and come out, and we don't own any of our music. We don't even own the name.
Yeah.
Yep.
I imagine that must have been one of the toughest lessons you had to learn.
Oh, man. I'm still learning it. I'm still fighting with Little Joe.
Yeah.
Still fighting with that guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to tell y'all this for folks who don't know. He owns Master Tapes from Professor Griff. He owns everything that Luke Records put out. Everything but MC Shy D. That's the only stuff he does not own. Everything else, he owns it. All the masters. All the footage. Everything. It's like, he's basically just like Shug.
Well,
He ain't like Suge as far as he ain't gonna be, he ain't no gangster. You know what I'm saying? He ain't no gangster. He just manipulated the system. And Suge took things with force. With force and fear.
Yeah, Suge hired people that just got out of jail yesterday to work in the office and boss folks around. Well, we know those stories. The brother Tony Green was on with us last season, and he told us some of those stories. The bass player and Scott with Drake and the Chronics to us. But back to Brother Marquise and Ramsey's, you asked some very interesting questions. Now, while all of this is going on, nobody is trying to step in and protect you guys, like, from yourselves, or you're just, it's happening so fast you don't even know that's what's really going on.
Yeah. None. As a matter of fact, it was lawyers with, they were all in cahoots with Mr. Weinberger, I believe. You know, this is
Miami. Oh, okay.
This is Miami, man, and, you know, it's a big Jewish community around here. You know, they go to throwing dollars around, they're going to stick together. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yep.
They have a saying, never mind what they said, follow their money.
Yep.
I think that's right. Now, you know, but you guys have some fun, and you changed the music industry forever. Nobody can take that from y'all. Nobody.
Nope.
You know, this guy got your publishing and so on and so forth, and he got the name of the act, but he can't take away the power that you really have.
Yep.
Nobody can do that to you. And that's a beautiful thing.
But I'm still out here performing. I'm doing shows. I'm using the Two Live Crew name, and I'm using the music. I think it would be enough that Mr. Weinberger be like, yes, let them guys have this shit, and it's enough. You know, Chinaman died, you know, nothing. I mean, it's just, you know,
right? And he had no reason to make these moves other than He just enjoys being shrewd.
Now, let me...
pretty much the line you said of it.
Now, I don't mean to cut in, but let me ask you a question. Chinaman, for the world who don't know, died with nothing? Explain that, elaborate a little more on the situation, if you can, Brother Marquise.
Look it up on, look it up on YouTube. The man died with nothing. Weinberger, you know, the little Joe ain't doing nothing for the family, ain't doing nothing, man. Just like, you know, I've even heard him say that one of his employees, this other white guy that works in the office with Joe, this is what we're doing. This is what we intend to do. Have you die and be broke. You're going to be broke and you're going to die with nothing. So that's the kind of shit that they talk amongst themselves. Yep. Yep.
Wow. This is not Nick, the Nevy Words. You're saying that you know this to be a fact.
Yep, it's all kind of shit going on. It's all kind of shit going on. Two live people.
Exploitation in the music industry.
Yep, so it is what it is, man. We didn't know the music business and we got screwed. Yep.
Now, along the way, did you meet any veterans who tried to help you get your boots laced?
Nobody, man. We didn't meet nobody. I mean, we met people, but nobody stepped in. Nobody stepped in to help us. Nobody. And then, you know, a lot of us was kind of jaded. So after that shit right there happened, man, we just kind of took it hard and just like said, fuck it, you know, for a while.
Mm-hmm. So if you could, after learning all those lessons, if you could pass down some advice to somebody that would be going through that same situation right now, what would you tell them?
I tell any up-and-coming artist to go to school, take you some entertainment courses, go to school for production, and own all of your intellectual property.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you own all your intellectual property. Go for the best deals, get you the best attorneys, and you know, and just cover everything.
Okay.
Yep.
Now, I want to ask you a question. And I think it was 93, you started a group called Too Nasty. How did that come about?
That went well, but we ran into some complications with that, and we made that one album, and then I had joined back forces with Mr. Weinberger and David Hobbs and Mr. Wong Wong, and we started to my group all over again in 95, but that was cool. Yeah, that was cool.
Now we want to talk about another record you did that was made popular again by Jay-Z. You did 99 Problems, but Ain't One.
Yeah.
With Ice-T.
Yeah, that's my record. Yeah, that's mine.
Now, talk about that, how that came about, you working with the legendary Ice-T on that song.
Well, I think I had said that. I said that phrase, and Ice liked it, and we just done a record together. And Jay-Z took it, sold 8 to 10 million copies. And of course, that made a lot of money. That made a lot of money, and me and Ice ain't cool no more because of that, so.
Why? Because it made a lot of money, or... Because.
Yeah, me and Ice ain't cool after that. You know, I guess somebody owe me some money. You know, when people owe you some money, they get mad at you.
Yeah, I had some of my LA friends do me like that too, you know.
Yep.
Actually, they borrowed the money, and then I found that how I found out that they didn't want to pay me back is somebody that knew both of us asked them how I was doing, and they said, I don't know, you know, he won't speak to me since I gave him $900.
Hey, that's how it is, the nature of the beast, man. But you know what, though? I can sit here, I can sit on this phone and cry through this whole interview, but I'm okay, and I'm moving. I'm moving. I'm working with guys. I'm making records. I'm working with guys, and things are going to be okay, you know? I'm living. I'm grateful to be here. I'm grateful for all of the lessons that I went through, for all of the trials and tribulations, and, you know, that's just my journey, you know?
This is true. This is true. Yep. The moral of the story so far is that if you're supposed to be doing what you're doing, because you are actually delivering what you brought with you, we'll just put it that way, as a human being. Well, you know, it doesn't, none of the stuff that's peripheral to that or incidental to that really matters. Deliver. Let the funk drop. Deliver. Mm-hmm. That is the main message behind what I'm hearing from you, Brother Marquis, is that with all the trials and tribulations and challenges that we have gone through, well, needless to say, so far you've survived them all. You don't sound like a victim. You sound like a survivor. You're still standing tall. You're still making it funky for us all. And, you know, that's saying more than you could put in the song, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Having said that, now, when you get to this crossover point, what is that like for you? You know, I'm listening to you talk about it, and you're saying that you noticed that, okay, so now white folks got this music now. You know, it's become this thing to do.
Mm-hmm. That is great, you know. That's when your life begins to change, you know, better shows, you know, more money, more exposure. And it gets a little bit more exciting. It becomes a little bit more exciting. You get that platform, you get that crossover platform, you know.
Now, is this the reason that they decide to shut the group down and then recreate it because y'all had this massive hit?
They tried to shut it down. They tried to shut it down, you know, after Luke went into bankruptcy and, you know, and we did all of the work. I guess he just probably figured, well, it's their stuff anyway, so, you know, hey, bump it. It's their stuff. Don't bump it. And I mean, they couldn't shut it down. They couldn't shut it down. I mean, you know, if we would have stuck together as a group, you know, ain't no telling where we would be right now. You know, probably be like the Rolling Stones or something. Yep. So remember, we went all the way to the Supreme Court and we won that, and we won the fight on censorship for the First Amendment. We won that. We won that in the Supreme Court, so they didn't shut nothing down. If anything, they gave it a boost. But we shut ourselves down, basically. We had problems. Internal problems, personal problems, and internal problems, and we shut ourselves down.
Wow. Now I want to ask you a question. Y'all were the first group that was a hip-hop group that ever performed on a Phil Donahue show. How was that like at the height of your success? Y'all on the Phil Donahue show with all the minorities performing your hits?
Yeah, that show was just, I mean, it was exciting, but it was just like, that show kind of sucked to me because they just was there. People was just there staring at us like, what the fuck are they doing? What are they saying? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. They weren't into it at all.
Really?
They weren't into it at all. You see, wasn't nobody clapping their hands.
No, they weren't clapping their hands.
So they weren't moving. They weren't
there was not one right. Black person in the audience, it seemed like. One person of color.
Nah.
And they all were like 50 and 40 and 60.
Yep, and they were like, what's going on?
I don't remember what I was doing during that period of time, but apparently, Will, I missed the show. So did they get interviewed on the Phil Donahue show or just do a performance?
We got interviewed and we performed. It's up on Facebook. I got it posted on Facebook, on my Facebook page.
Okay, I'm going to have to check that out.
Yeah. It's kind of like, whoa, you watch it, you're like, dang, ain't nobody into this. It's like they grossed out because of the lyrics and stuff.
Yep.
When they talking about popping that coochie, they grossed out over that.
Yep, I think we were doing the funk shop. Yeah.
Yes, y'all were.
Yep.
Man, but y'all did so many things. Now I want to ask you a question. What made you get back with Chinaman and do the song on the Friday soundtrack, Hoochie Mama? What made you want to get back with the crew?
Well, just to keep the legacy going, you know. We were all living and we were all, you know. We just wanted to get back with it and see what we could do. And, of course, you know. That was on the Platinum soundtrack, so that song was a hit. Then we came back with Shake a Little Something, which was a hit, which probably went gold, but Little Joe probably kept it from going gold or didn't tell us or not telling us that it went gold. So, we don't know.
But y'all did a lot of songs. You did songs with Casey and the Sunshine Band. And not too many rap groups did a song with Casey and the Sunshine Band.
Yeah, I've got a lot of songs now, man. It's just, we got songs with Too Short, E-40, Trick, Trina, Manny Fresh.
Now, let me ask you a question. There was rumors of two unreleased albums that Little Joe has. Are they actually true? Because we know about the song you did with Manny Fresh.
Yeah. Yep, Joe has some music. He has some music. Put out the wrong single. I think he sabotaged it on purpose. I think he sabotaged the project on purpose.
Because we thought Too Loud were back. Manny Fresh and Too Loud Crew. Back that thing up. We'll pop that coochie. Come on. That's a hit.
Yep.
That's a hit.
Yep, they sabotaged it. Put out the wrong single and canned it. And canned that whole thing. Yeah.
Wow.
I don't think Little Joe, if one of those records took off to become a hit, I don't think he would want to pay the money. You know, when you get a hit record, you got to pay, keep it going. And I don't think he wanted to do that.
We call him the compilation brother. He's a dude, the compilation guy who puts out enough compilations of recycled old material of the Too Loud Crew and Luke Record fame. That's all he does.
Yep, that's all he does. Yep.
Very interesting profile of an independent record label owner. This is getting real interesting. Got to stop because
yep.
Just about to
he's
stop
the original culture vulture. He's the first one. He's the first culture vulture.
Well, you heard that here first.
Yep. Yes, you did. Yes, you did. And you are listening, if you just tuned in to UPRN Music Talk Radio with 107.5 and 107.7 FM on your dial. If you just tuned in. This is You Heard It Here First, UHISR Radio Broadcast Team. My name is Benito Childs, and my co-host with me tonight is Will Todd Turner. And we've been speaking with Brother Marquis from the Too Loud Crew. We also have a young person on with us tonight, Ramses, who's got some new music for us. We always try to have a veteran and somebody just getting started with their venture on each show. That being said, one more time, Ramsey, say hello to the world.
Hello, viewers, listeners. My name is Ramsey. I'm a hip-hop artist, producer, audio engineer from Phoenix, Arizona, trying to make it in this record industry.
So you've been kind of enjoying the conversation, Ramsey, and you kind of have, you had some questions of your own for Brother Marquis. What is your impression at this point, you know, because you, in my opinion, are getting the real bathroom sit on the milk crate, you know, let's get right up into it conversation. And most cats that are at your point in the business don't get to do that with people who have already had some experience, they've already had an adventure, and they're still on the journey. What does that feel like for you?
It's honestly a blessing because I had some questions that I feel only people that have been in the industry can answer them. And the questions I did ask, the answers I got were very insightful and honestly what I needed to hear, because you hear a bunch of stories about how, like, people in the music industry are shady, they're not always looking out for your best interests. You know, I think Q-Tip has a line. It's like rule number something something, record industry people are shady.
Yes, he does.
And I hear that a lot. And to hear it personally from somebody who made such a great big impact, that he's also been a victim of the bad side of the industry business, it's kind of like eye-opening, because it really shows me that, like, nobody is really safe out here. You know what I mean? So,
no, this is your big traffic. You have to... Part of what happens in our business is that if you have taken the initiative to go inform and educate yourself, well, it shows.
And you get a higher level of respect.
People think second and third about, well, no, you can't do that to him. He knows better. You don't even want to get in the conversation with him. You don't want to get caught thinking about trying to do that out loud. Not with him. You're losing. He's smarter than that. And that's who you got to be all the time when you do the business part.
Yeah.
Of course, in addition to that, you got to act again. But I wanted to ask Brother Marquis, because, you know, y'all made hits, okay? What is your opinion about the difference between you made a hit and you didn't really have one, but they pushed for it on the business side?
Well, it's a difference. Well, we made them. We didn't buy them. We didn't buy hit records. We made them. So
I never was in one of those situations, you know, where, like, cats right now, some record companies right now buy hits, you know. They buy the charts. They buy everything. We had bona fide hits, you know, especially after the Masters We Want to Be album. It seems like everything that we throw out there just stuck right up against the wall and just made it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That's why y'all made that monumental album, Man, in the USA.
Yeah.
Now let me ask you a question. Go ahead. Let me ask you a question. I truly wonder if you and Luke would ever do anything in the near future, or you ever see yourself doing something with Uncle Luke ever again.
Nah, I doubt it. You know, Luke, I don't know what Luke's problem is. Luke doesn't like us. He just left Two Live Crew and just left it. You know, he came to try to make it. Well, I mean, we did do something. We did do a couple of dates, you know, and I'm glad that we did. Me, him, and Chinaman, we did do a couple of dates.
We did the Funk Fest 1 year, and we did Club Live, and that was it. We did the Funk Fest 1 year, and that was it. About 5 or 6 shows on the Funk Fest, and that was that.
Wow.
So I doubt if we ever, do anything again. I doubt it, very seriously.
Now, let me ask you another question. Is there any artist out here now that you really feel and that you really feel like is taking on the legacy of Two Live Crew to the next level?
No. No. Can't nobody do what we did. They try, but can't nobody.
Is there anybody out here you're feeling that that's doing music now? Do you like, man, I really like these young guys. They're doing some good stuff.
Well, only one group out there that can kind of put you in the mind of Two Live Crew, but they don't have any dancers or whatever. It's like the Migos. You know, it's like there's no groups anymore. It's just solo artists. There's no rap groups anymore.
Yeah.
My favorite rap group was Outkast.
Out of any rap group,
they sold the most records out of any group.
That's amazing.
It ain't no groups out there no more. It's just one guy, one girl.
Now, let me ask you a question. You doing tours and all that stuff, what is your most wild experience that's not too X-rated that's happened when, at the height of your success on tour with the original Two Live Crew?
It's a lot of them, man. I got a gang of those stories. That's probably one of my problems. I was having a lot of fun performing. and wasn't paying attention.
Now, let me ask you a question. Was there any artist who you were surprised were super fans of Two Live Crew that you never thought would like your music?
Probably like N.W.A.
Wow.
NWA.
Did y'all ever tour with Dr. Dre, Eazy-E, and all them?
Yeah. We toured with him. And this is crazy you asked that, because we were in St. Louis one time, and this was when Luke had the first private jet. He was the only rapper had the first private jet back then, and we were in St. Louis, and some kind of way we had dancers, and Eazy-E and Dr. Dre and everybody, they had our dancers out one night, and we were leaving early in the morning, and Luke left the girls. And I think Eazy and them had to send them back to Miami. And Luke left them.
Who was when you were in it and coming up, who was one of the artists that, you know,
I like LL Cool J, Run DMC, you know, who was the one that you met,
like, had you starstruck?
I like Grandmaster J, because I really wanted to meet, like, Run and DMC and all of that, but our very first show, we were in Jackson, Mississippi, and Mr. Mix was cutting Peter Piper, and Run came and took the 12-inch off of the stage and threw it into the crowd, and it was a little ruckus, but Grandmaster J was always cool. Chuck D was cool. There's a lot of people that was cool. Biz Markie was cool. Uh-huh. Yeah, Biz Markie was cool. Jazzy Jeff. A lot of people were cool. You know, a lot of people were cool. You know, when you meet them, but like the management and stuff like that, like Rush Management would give us the business. You know, they tried to play us. You know, we were coming from the South. They tried to play us a lot. You know.
Yeah,
they tried to play us, but you know, that's the name of the game.
Man, but y'all kicked in the door. Luke Records was selling units like crazy. He had the Poison Clan. That was the Baby Two Live Crew. He had Two Live Crew. Those were the biggest acts selling.
They didn't have to be pushed by Atlantic Records. They were distributed by Atlantic ACO, but then they had to be pushed by Time Warner. They pushed their own product.
Yeah, that was just Mandy's USA album. That was just that album. That one album gave that one album to Atlantic Records, and the rest we did on our own.
That? Well, you being a pioneer, what is your opinion about where rap music is going at this point? I mean, the genre itself is what, almost 40 years old, if not more?
Yeah.
So where are we going?
I don't know. That's a good question, man. That's a good question.
You guys shook things up so much that it could be anything now. You know, you
what?
Broaden the horizon and made the whole thing so much more wider than it could have been. And, you know, I'm just curious, you being part of the energy that made that happen for everybody, looking at what did they do with the marvelous opportunity that y'all created for them to be able to say what was on their mind. And what is your opinion about what they will do moving forward from where we are?
I don't know. Basically, I don't know because, you know, we're getting younger. And the records are, it's just getting way more easier to do, right now. And you know, well, the possibilities are endless, you know what I'm saying? Due to the internet, you know, and all of the streaming services and everything. So, you know, man, it's going to be rap. I think it's going to be rap, but it's going to be more genres of rap. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
You're going to have your electric rap. You're going to have your rock rap, you know, and I think it's going to go like that in a minute.
I think it's going to go like rock rap because I do see the new era, like the Lil Uzi Verts and the Denzel Curry's and all these other like big names now, they're mixing it up. Influence is a lot of rock.
Yeah, they're mixing it up.
I'm glad you brought that up because I've been thinking that too. Like they're starting to mix. I mean, rock is always kind of like,
you know, they're gonna mix it up.
I feel like now it's not just the sonics, it's also the appearances as well.
Yeah, they're going to mix it up. And the rappers are the rock stars of today, especially the young guys. You can tell the way that they're dressed, the way they dress with all the tight shit on and all the wild colors and everything. You know, they wear gold chains. You know, the rockers just used to wear silver and all kind of skull and bones rings, and now rappers and rockers on Harley Davises and muscle cars. Now rappers got on gold and diamonds, jumping out of Bentleys and shit. So it is what it is.
I hope to see this in the near future. A hip hop group like Kiss. Mark my words. In the near future, we're going to see a hip hop group like
Kiss. The Black Beatles.
Yep, we're gonna see it. It's gonna be something. We're gonna blow out all our minds, like how Kiss were with the whole thing.
When you find them, or if they find you before you find them, call me first. You heard it here first.
Yeah, no, it's definitely coming.
It's gonna be a mixture of George Clinton, Parliament Funkadelic, Rick James, The Beatles, and Kiss all together.
That's a tall order, Will. That's a real tall order. But you know what? Speaking about new, Ramsey's got some music, man. Let's get a heargasm. You know, I kind of heard about 30, 35 seconds of this one joint that he did that he was running by the rest of the team. I think it's called Sauce. Do we have that?
Yes, we do. We're going to play that for the world. Then we're going to get back into some more Fly Questions with the legendary Brother Marquise from the original Two Live Crew, representing that the Miami, Florida, Dade County, Liberty City area.
take a loss. Doing my thing, don't hate, cause I'm feeling great. Today's about to be my best day. Feeling no other type of way. If this isn't happy, you can get it out of my face. Gonna be great, God himself told me this the other day. Don't worry about what they say. Sooner or later, they all gotta pay. Trust in your talent and watch the cash influx. Keep your head up like we discussed. A lot of snakes in the grass. Watch where you pass, they're quick to bite your ass. Blood is thicker than water, but sometimes a bond is stronger than the other. Love who you love, just realize you're not the one to judge. Above all else, love is a must.
Ooh, dripping in some sauce. Direct deposit hit today, now I'm feeling like a boss. Ooh, dripping in some sauce. Woke up feeling great today, I can't take a loss. Doing my thing, don't hate, cause I'm feeling great today. It's about to be my best day. Feeling no other type of way. If this isn't happy, you can get it out of my face.
Kids who get high repeatedly don't want to come down. Wanna come down.
It's the way that we move. It's the way that we move.
Kids who get high repeatedly don't want to come down. Wanna come down. Kids who get high repeatedly don't want to come down. Wanna come down.
Dripping in some sauce. Direct deposit hit today. Now I'm feeling like a boss. Dripping in some sauce. Woke up feeling great today. I can't take a loss. Doing my thing, don't hate, cause I'm feeling great today. It's about to be my best day. Feeling no other type of way. If this isn't happy, you can get it out of my face.
Serotonin in my brain be flowing this morning. Woke up feeling great, no yawning. Gotta tell myself I'm beautiful before I walk out the door. Yeah, that's the usual. If I can't love myself, I'll always try to seek approval from everybody else.